Welcome back, everybody, to the third edition of the Cock of the Walk podcast, brought to you by Win or Die Sports. This is your host, Wesley Burris, with my co-host, Taylor Griggs. And today, we're going to do something a little bit different. It's not going to be a Gamecock episode, per se, because we're going to preview, give you a little rundown of the SEC East. And I think that's kind of where we wanted to go. Over on our Tiger podcast, we're going to preview the Atlantic Division. And then next week, we'll bring you the opposite sides of the conference to both of those. So the West next week and the Coastal next week on the other podcast. Taylor, today, I think what we want to do is kind of run down each team. We're going to go in alphabetical order. So we're going to start with the Gators. We've got a little bit to talk about each team, bring you some little bit of stats, who they've got coming back, who they lost, where we kind of see the teams going overall as we go along. And then at the end of the episode, once we've recapped all of the information we need to give you, I think that then we're going to make our predictions as to how the chips will fall and how the division is going to end up. So who's going to be in Atlanta? I kind of have it in my mind, and I think I'm right in line with the national media for the most part. We kind of went out on a limb and made a dark horse prediction, and I will kind of do that, give you a couple sleepers here in the conference over the next couple weeks of the SEC and the ACC. So we're going to kick it off with the Gators. And what I think about Florida is I think they made one of the best hires in the country. I think Dan Mullen fits what ails them. Much like bringing in Will Muschamp in Columbia, where we had so many problems with the defense, and that was really where we were struggling. I mean, because statistically in 2014, the Gamecocks had the best offense as far as total offensive rankings, which is yards per game, of any team in school history. And then the next year we had a drop-off, but that offense was actually better than the last 2 years' offenses in Columbia. So that's unacceptable to me. Hopefully Muschamp can turn that around. This downturn of offense at Florida happened on Muschamp's watch after Urban Meyer left the program, but kind of had begun when Dan Mullen left Urban Meyer's side, because Urban Meyer lost the team not long after that, and the recruiting had stopped. You didn't develop Cam Newton into your next guy. You let him go. He ended up going to JUCO, won a national championship there, and then, of course, went to Auburn and is now winning big time on Sunday. So Florida has really struggled at the quarterback position since then. They have had nice running backs and competent wide receivers, but for whatever reason, they haven't been able to put it together. And, Taylor, throw me some of the stats here so we can let these people know just how bad this offense was last year, because it was putrid. They won first. Well, before we go into that, let's just give you the results of what happened last year. So they went 4-7 because they had a canceled game with Northern Colorado, and their opening game though against Michigan, they lost 33-17. This was a very strange football game. Michigan had a pretty darn good defense. Florida's defense played well throughout the game, bunch of turnovers. Florida could not get the ground game going and just lost this game in ugly fashion late. They then had one of those crazy games with Tennessee. I want to say this game was 6-3 or 6-6 in the fourth quarter, at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Ended up being a 26-20 win for the Gators. So they beat the Vols yet again. They just, even when they're bad and when they're down, they just don't lose to the Vols consistently, and that has not happened for a long time. Tennessee's in trouble. Florida looks a lot more down than what they actually are, because they got a ton of talent coming back. And we know it's unproven talent, and sometimes guys, you know, you don't think that guys that didn't produce last year are going to produce this year. But they then turned it around, well, squeaked one out against Kentucky, won by a point in Lexington. Hell, that's something the Gamecocks can't do right now. And then they beat Vanderbilt the next week by two touchdowns at home. And then they went on to lose, what, five games in a row? Lost to LSU 17-16, lost to A&M 19-17. So just these squeakers. I mean, if they win two of those games, you're probably stuck with McElwain. So I think it's a blessing in disguise that they lost these ball games and got a coach like Mullen, who had a decent time at Mississippi State. I don't think they were ever world beaters, and they made it to the top of the rankings or close to the top of the rankings a couple of times, and then they fell off because they have to run into powers like Bama, and Ole Miss was up high the last several years as well. So then they go play Georgia and Jacksonville, and this just turned into a blowout, 42-7. Georgia ran all over them, just imposed their will all game long. The next week at Missouri, same thing. Missouri just blistered them. I mean, just it was a track meet for on one-sided track meet, just running by guys, hitting big plays. They came to Columbia and made it a little closer late. It's a very ugly game. We were kind of talking about this before we kicked the podcast off. 28-20 loss to the Gamecocks. They beat UAB 36-7 in a game where there were a lot of experts on ESPN calling for an upset loss and the Gators just being in complete disarray. And then once again losing to Florida State. And I want to say that makes like three in a row or four in a row. Four in a row, I believe, against the Gators, or against the Seminoles now. And the Gators just don't have it on track. Now, Taylor, give me those stats I asked for a second ago, because when you hear these offensive numbers, they're bad.
They had the 108th ranked scoring offense with 22 points a game.
Damn.
The 75th ranked rushing offense with 156 yards per game. Passing was 179. That was good for the 101
ranking. God almighty.
In total, they had 336 yards. Is that what that is?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure.
I can't even read my own right.
It is. It's total yards.
Total offense was 109.
And an interesting fact on that, you know, the Gamecocks, and I'm a Gamecock fan. I love them, man, but I have to throw this out there right now. We were ranked 108th on offense last year. And so not much better than the Gators. So you listen to those numbers and how putrid they sound, how just dreadful it seems to be down in the swamp on the offensive side of the ball. Just for a comparison, I got two numbers for you. That is an improvement over the last 2 years for the Gators, because they were 111th in 2015 and 116th in 2016. I think there's 132 or 133 teams in FBS now. I'm not 100% sure on that. Yeah, so it's very, very, very low. All right, give us the defensive numbers, what the Gators did on that side of the ball, because traditionally, especially the last 25 years, they've been very good defensively.
They had the 69th ranked scoring defense, allowed 27 points a game.
Yeah, they weren't their usual selves in the secondary. It didn't
rushing,
seem like.
They allowed 154, 50th ranked rushing defense. Passing, 195 yards a game for the 28th ranked passing defense.
Nah, total, that's not awful.
No, total they were 349, and that was for the 31st ranked.
Okay. Any other stats you got on there?
Turnover margin.
Okay.
They were -3 for 89 ranked.
See, the defensive numbers there, if you say, all right, so the total defense is 31st, that doesn't sound like it's that bad, because if you put a top, I don't know, top 60, top 50 offense on that with a 30th ranked defense or whatnot, you're probably an 8-win, 9-win football team, if not even a little bit better, possibly. I mean, the thing is, this league is very difficult to be proficient on the offensive side of the ball. It really is, on a week-to-week basis. So your totals can get a little skewed. And the SEC teams do tend to face weaker opponents out of conference, other than rivals, because there are cross rivalries with the ACC, which I think is very cool and keeps tradition going. But then they do play a couple cupcakes, especially teams like Florida and Alabama. They tend to play some super cupcakes at the beginning of the year to pad stats. And I don't know. Those are games to me that I could do without. You do need a tune-up every once in a while, but – where do we say we were going to go next? We were going to go ahead and
run through next year's schedule and
run the schedule down, and then do the. Or you want to do the? No, we're going to do the depth chart and whatnot first. I think that's the way we need to do it.
Well, they have 10 offensive starters coming back,
and that could be a good or bad thing. Like we said, that we don't know if they can produce offensively, but I'm sure Dan Mullen is going to figure something out. He likes a quarterback that can run, that's mobile. It's not necessarily that he has to run a lot. But that's a big part of his offense, is the read option, a lot of run pass option plays, short dump offs. The backs have to be involved in the passing game, and I think they have some pretty decent backs. How many starters they got back on defense?
Seven.
That's potential to be a big-time improvement because Florida is going to be able to recruit at a super high level always. And I think with the fact that Florida State has a coaching change, we'll see how that pans out in the next couple of years. With them hiring Dan Mullen, they have a chance. Man, the state
I don't see that guy at Florida State.
I don't know what to think of him yet, but I can't say he's bad.
Too long.
Well, I think that he's kind of in a bad position because he has two good coaches at his two major rivals. Rick at Miami, we'll get into that in an ACC future ACC episode. I think he's going to do good things there. He's already improved the team. I think he's kind of bringing a little bit of swagger back. They're not on the level of a Clemson right now, and that could take a long time to get there. But they're definitely on the uptick, and they've looked better. The Gators have done nothing but look bad. You can't get much worse than 4-7 there. I don't see them doing any worse than that. So they did lose last year. They lost Brandon Powell, wide receiver. Defensive tackle Taven Bryan, Duke Dawson at corner, their kicker Eddie Pinheiro, and their punter Johnny Townsend. That was pretty much the only guys that really contributed a whole bunch that they lost. And just to go through their little two deep really quickly, and we're going to do this kind of format for each team and try to go as fast as we can. Felipe Franks is considered to be the returning starter at quarterback. He was the first freshman to start in the season opener since 1988, and that was he didn't show much, but he did show that he could I guess take care of the football at times. They didn't really ask too much of him, so we'll see. He'll definitely have to be a bigger part of Mullen's offense. LaMichael Perine Jr. and I guess that's how you say it, LaMichael,
hell of a name.
He looked like a solid back, and he was the starter. But we had Jordan Scarlett, who missed 2017 due to a suspension for alleged credit card fraud. They're penciled in as the 1 and 2 backs. At wide receiver, you got Van Jefferson and Rick Wells are going to man one spot. Van Jefferson's an Ole Miss transfer. He's applied for immediate eligibility and will play this year. Tyree Cleveland is a returning starter at that position, as well as Josh Hammond Jr. And then you've got other guys like Kadarius Toney and Freddie Swain Jr. They're going to get out there. They used Kadarius Toney in the Wildcat some last year, so we'll see what they do with him. Mullen has a knack for getting the ball in playmakers' hands, and he tends to, in my view, he tends to trust, you know, 3, 4, 5 guys really and stick with those. But he should have many options here. At Florida, I think with guys that aren't proven, he's a damn good coach. He seems like a level-headed guy, and he's a really good recruiter, I would think. So I'm going to see there's going to have to be improvement here. I mean, I don't see how you could really bet against him at this point. At tight end, you got Ciante Lewis, Morrell Stevens, senior who will back him up. And the whole entire offensive line is back. Martez Ivey, he was a 5-star prospect. He started 31 games in his career. Brett Heggie is back. He took his spot back from a freshman last year. TJ McCoy left spring practice as a serious contender for the starting job at center. They're going to be backed up by Chris Bleak and Nick Buchanan Jr. Freddie Johnson is going to play right guard. He's rotated with Jordan. That's Tyler Jordan, I should say. He's another senior, and they've rotated on the offensive line the last few years. And at right tackle, you got Juwan Taylor, who started 23 of 24 games in his first 2 years on campus. Evan McPherson is an All-American verbal commit to Mississippi State, who flipped and followed Mullen here to Florida. Probably a smart move on his part. Get the hell out of Stark Vegas and come on to Gainesville. Probably a little better scenery, I would think. Over on the defensive side of the ball, and where I expect immediate improvement, and they've got enough starters back to make a difference. Starting on the defensive line, we got Jabari Zuniga. He had 16.5 tackles for loss and 9 sacks the last 2 years. Hasn't played a ton till late last year, but he came on pretty strong. Antonius Clayton penciled in behind him. Luke Ankrum in the middle at defensive tackle. He's been a reserve, but he'll push for a starting job along with to Daryl Staten. Kyrie Clark will play nose tackle when they get in the 3-4, and he'll play in the 4-3 technique. He'll play as another defensive tackle. He was recruited by Will Muschamp, and he's appeared in 38 games. He's been a solid player. C.C. Jefferson at the other end spot. He decided he wanted to play rush in the 3-4 scheme, so he wanted to stay another year and finish up at Florida. They're going to run a primarily run a 3-4, it seems like, but they're going to switch back and forth with a 4-man front, probably play a little 5-man as well, certain situations. At linebacker, you got Rashad Johnson, backed up by Vashawn Joseph. I don't know how the hell you say that name. He was the starter last year. David Reese in the middle, he's back. Third linebacker in University of Florida history to top 100 tackles in a season. And Marco Wilson at corner, C.J. Henderson at corner. And they're going to be backed up by Trey Dean III and Brian Edwards. And then you have a little nickelback that they'll run in certain packages, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and Amari Burney. They're competing for that spot. Brad Stewart at strong safety, along with Quincy Linton. Jawan Taylor at free safety, and Sean Davis backing him up. And a new punter in Tommy Townsend, and he's got some competition there as well. I think the Gators are going to be improved. I don't know how much, so let's run through the schedule and see what we think. And don't hold us to these predictions because we're just doing this on the fly here. This is nothing that I have necessarily sat around and thought about. But I do think they'll be an improved football team. September 1st, they take on Charleston Southern.
Win.
I'm going to call that a win as well. Kentucky comes to Gainesville the next week.
Lose.
No, that's a win. They beat them last year at Kentucky. I don't think they lose this year. Colorado State at home.
Win.
Okay. At Tennessee, I think that's a win.
Yeah.
I just think they're a better program, better talent. At Miss State, this could be a revenge game because Miss State is being considered a slight dark horse over in the West. I think a lot of people have them peg 8-9 wins. I don't think that's dumb. I could see that being a loss. That's a tough place to play, so I'll call that a loss. I will, and don't hold me to that, but yeah. It could be a loss.
I feel like they win that game.
Okay, well, you disagreed on Kentucky, whatever. Tomato, tomato. LSU at home. Squeaked by them last year. LSU doesn't have a quarterback. It's a toss-up. It's in the swamp. I give it to Florida. At Vandy, that's a win. Georgia and Jacksonville, they've owned Georgia historically. Not on Georgia's level right now. But by that point in the year, I think this offense will be clicking. I'm going to call an upset. Missouri at home. Got shellacked by Missouri last year.
Probably the same.
If they don't really improve on offense, they could get beat by Missouri again. South Carolina, we called it a win, I think, for the Gamecocks on the other side. So I'm going to do the same thing here. Idaho at home, that's a win. And at Florida State, that's a toss-up, but I got to give it to the Noles. So I'm going to say we had, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We got an 8-win team. So that's a big improvement over 4-7. So I don't think that's that bad, and we'll move right along from there because I don't really want to go that much more in-depth. I do want to mention their recruiting really quick. They ranked nationally 14th, did the Gators this year, which is good for 4th in the SEC. Their average stars were 3.74, and they had 19 commitments, 14 4-stars, and 5 3-stars. They've got some help. They got a well-rounded recruiting class, it looks like. Mullen came up, didn't have what they're used to getting, but another solid class and definitely some talent always with the Gators. Next, we're going to move on to my least favorite team on planet Earth, and I know a lot of people think that would be the Clemson Tigers. No, it's not. It's the Georgia damn Bulldogs, and I can't stand them. And they were the runners-up for the national championship last year. Most people have them pegged to do a hell of a lot this year as well. Go ahead and, they went 13-2. And, you know, we don't need to run down all the games, I don't think. We're just going to try to cut this a little short. So I'm not going to run down all of the games last year. You can go look that up for yourselves. Give us some stats real quick on the Bulldogs and let's talk about what they got going forward instead of talking about last year.
They had the number 20 scoring offense, 35 points per game. The 9th best rushing offense, 258 yards per game.
Damn.
The 105th best passing offense.
Didn't have to throw.
So I'm at 176 yards. So they were overall the number 32 ranked offense.
How many yards a game they have?
435.
That's pretty solid.
Defense.
This is where they were stout.
Scoring. They allowed 16 points per game.
Wow.
Number 6 in the nation. Rushing, 126 for the 20th best rushing defense. Passing, they had 168 they only allowed 168 yards per game for the eighth best passing defense, and total 295 yards for the sixth best defense.
Huh.
Plus four turnover margin for the that ranked 44th.
Most winning teams have that. The only things on the schedule last year to go over, they had two losses. They lost at Auburn big time, 40-17, a game where I believe they scored first, and then Auburn just pummeled on them in the run game. It was ridiculous. And then the game against Alabama where they easily could have won. And it was back and forth, and they were in control for very much of the football game. I mean, they really were. Georgia is strong. They recruited very well. Returning starters, how many we got back on offense and defense,
Tyler? They have seven offensive starters and four defensive starters.
And the seven offensive starters, I do think there's a – could put a little asterisk there. One of them is a place kicker, but he's a damn good kicker, Blankenship. He made 20 or 23 field goals last year. And how many on defense?
Four
starters back. This is where they lost a lot on defense, but a lot of these guys played, man. They rotated a lot of guys. Kirby Smart will coach them up. They have recruited extremely well. I think they've been top five or six the last several years in recruiting them. From what I've seen defensively, the way they attack and the way they wrap up and tackle the last couple years, they seem to be the only team to me that kind of resembles Alabama and Clemson on the defensive side of the ball, the way they attack, the way they shut down the run game. They get after the quarterback. It's just ferocious. Run down the depth chart real quick. We got Jake Fromm. He is a winner. He might not be the best quarterback in the world, but he takes care of the ball, and he's an accurate passer, and he has a good mind, and he's a leader. They follow him. Behind him is Justin Fields. We've got DeAndre Swift, a demon, speed demon at running back, but he's also powerful. And Brian Herrien is a junior who will back him up. They've also recruited a couple five stars to go along with them back there. And at wide receiver, we got Terry Godwin, and Tyler Simmons, Mecole Hardman, Jeremiah Holloman, Riley Ridley, and Matt Landers. They're going to all rotate in and out. Georgia usually runs two or three wide. I think they've pretty much kept the same offensive game plan, even with the coaching change, getting eye backs, pro style offense, smart plays, pound the rock, play defense, good sound kicking game and return game. They're just all around good football team. At tight end, you got Isaac Nauta and Charlie Warner. At left tackle, Andrew Thomas, backed up by DeMarcus Hayes. Kendall Baker at left guard, backed up by Solomon Kinley. At center, you got Lamont Gaillard, and backed up by Warren Erickson. Right guard, Ben Cleveland, backed up by Natori Johnson. Right tackle, Isaiah Wilson, backed up by Cade Mays and Rodrigo Blankenship, as I mentioned a while ago, at kicker. Defense, we got four starters back, as you said. At end, you got Jonathan Ledbetter, Julian Rochester at tackle position. They run a 3-4 here with Tyler Clark at the other end. They're going to be backed up by David Marshall Jr., Daquan Hawkins, and Malik Herrig. And we've got Walter Grant, Natrez Patrick, and Monty Rice, and DeAndre Walker, all new faces at linebacker position. Several of them played some last season. As a backup, DeAndre Walker had 5.5 sacks and 13.5 tackles for loss. And they're going to be backed up by Robert Beal, Juwan Taylor, Tay Crowder, and Keon Brown. In the secondary, you got DeAndre Baker back. He was second-team All-SEC last year. Tyreek McGee, he was second on the team with 5 pass breakups. They're going to be backed up by Amir Speed and Mark Webb. And at safety, you got J.R. Reed. He's a blitzing machine. He's had a bunch of quarterback pressures. He only had 1.5 sacks last year, but they do bring him in several situations to stuff the run and confuse the quarterback. At free safety, you've got Richard LeCount. And he's a big-time recruit that didn't play much last year but played some special teams, and he's going to get in there with Latavius Brenny at free safety. Marshall Long's a new punter. He redshirted last season after starting in 2016. He's going to be backed up by Bill Rubright. And in recruiting, they just absolutely cleaned up, knocked it out of the park, ranked number one nationally, number one in the SEC, 26 commitments. 7 of them were blue chips, 15 4-stars, and 4 3 stars. So – expect a lot out of the Bulldogs. Let's run through the schedule as fast as possible. You tell me what you think, win or loss. I'll tell you whether I agree or not. Austin Peay, September 1st.
That just one person?
Maybe.
Win.
Yes. At Columbia, win. Playing the Gamecocks.
Win.
Can't argue against that. Middle Tennessee State and Athens.
Big win.
At Missouri.
Win.
I'm calling it a loss.
How about that?
All right. At Tennessee at home.
Win.
Vandy at home.
Win.
At LSU.
Win.
If it's a night game, it could be weird. But I'm going to call it a win. Florida and Jacksonville. Already called Florida a winner there.
Yeah, I don't. But
all that's fine. At Kentucky.
Win.
Yep. Auburn at home.
Loss.
Revenge. That's a win. Massachusetts.
Win.
The Ramblin' Wreck.
Win.
I don't know. Ramblin' Wreck's got a lot of talent come back. It's always a crazy game. Last season, they beat Georgia Tech 38-7, missing all that defensive talent. I'm going to still call it a win. Closer than the experts think, and we don't even know what the hell the experts think yet. So that had us what? We had them with two losses? That's what they ended up with last year. I think they're probably your East champions. I think it'd be stupid to argue otherwise. I will have something a little weird to say about that later. Let's move on to the Wildcats in the Bluegrass State. What we got information-wise on them?
They had they tied the 87th best offense, scoring offense, 25 points per game. Rushing offense, 162 yards per game for 68th. Passing, 188 yards per game for 96th. Total, average 350 yards per game for the 103rd best offense.
They're a weird football team. What'd they do on defense?
Scoring, they had allowed 28 points per game for the 75th best scoring defense. Rushing, 175 yards per game for the 78th best rushing defense.
Yeah.
Passing, they allow 251 yards per game for the 102nd best passing defense. Can you even say best when it's that low?
Yeah, it's
worst.
Well, that's fine, but best is correct, I think. But
total, 427 yards for the 91st
right.
ranked defense.
Bad numbers on that side of the ball.
Turnover margin plus +3.
How? That must be the only reason they're 7-6. So that's how they beat the Gamecocks. And we got to do something about that. Last season, we're not going to run through the schedule, but they did beat Carolina, which was a big win. They beat Southern Miss in the opener, which actually was a pretty nice win because Southern Miss had beaten them the year before in Lexington. So that was a big win for them. They beat Missouri as well, and that's before Missouri went on their streak. They got blown out by Mississippi State, but they also beat the Vols and beat Vandy last year. So Gamecock fans, we can count ourselves in the minority of teams that have lost a while. They have owned us the last few years. I'm tired of that shit. Sorry for the language. How many starters we got back so I can get off of this team? Because I really hate them too. I mean,
7 on offense.
Oh, no.
9 on defense.
Wow. Okay. So that defense might improve from, what, 92? It might very well improve. And we're going to go through the depth chart really, really quickly. Gunnar Hoke is a new quarterback. We don't know if he's going to be the quarterback here. He's going to battle with Terry Wilson and some younger guys. They haven't named a starter yet. We'll figure that out going forward. Benny Snell is back, and he's pretty damn dominant, man. He's been a nice back the last few years. He's going to battle it out with Sheem King and Dorian Baker, Lynn Bowden, and Taven Richardson. And they're going to be at the wide receiver positions, backed up by Marvin Alexander, Cleveland Thomas, and Josh Ali. At tight end, C.J. Conrad, he's pretty decent. They're comparing him to Jacob Tammy. We'll see. Justin Rigg will back him up. At tackle, left tackle, you got Landon Young. He started 9 games at left tackle, and he's been pretty solid. He'll be backed up by E.J. Price. Logan Stenberg at left guard, he's a 13-game starter last year, and he returns. They're expected to be pretty good on the left side of the ball. They like to pound the football. Hopefully, we can do something about that, but we haven't been able to the last few years to control the line of scrimmage against these guys. Drake Jackson is at center, and he didn't really get the starting job down till later last year, but he's now become the starter as a sophomore, as a true sophomore, back in his second year. Bunchy Stallings at right guard. He's got 24 starts and has also played center. And he'll be backed up by Austin Dotson, who's a freshman at the right guard position. And at right tackle, we've got George Asafo Adeji. And he's got 36 games played, and he's found his niche here at right tackle. He'll be backed up by Nasir Watkins, who's a freshman. Chance Poor will replace the all-time Kentucky leading scorer, Austin McGinnis, at place kicker. Over on the defensive side of the ball, at end, one end, we have Joshua Paschal, who's moved from outside linebacker to the line in the spring, and they say he's made a big impact, and he could take T.J. Carter's job over the end position. And Carter's a solid player, just probably not the kind of edge rusher they would like. But in the three, excuse me, in the three-man front that they play, it's more about having a little bit of a pass rush, but just a solid play against the run as well up front. So he might be a more sure tackler. Who knows? Quentin Bahama has started the final five games as a true freshman, and he's got a high ceiling that they think he'll be backed up by Tamir DeBose, who is a senior. Adrian Middleton, who's a senior, started 25 straight games. He's going to play the other tackle position on defense. They kind of run a weird mishmash of 3-4 and whatnot, and switch it up a good bit, but like to use three-man fronts predominantly. And at linebacker, you got Josh Allen. He led the team in sacks, tackles for loss last year. He's added lower body bulk, they say, in the offseason and has improved even more. He'll be backed up by Boogie Watson. Cash Daniel will be one of your inside linebackers, along with Jamin Davis. Jordan Jones will be the other inside linebacker, backed up by Alex King. And Denzel Ware, who is a big-time senior and been a vocal leader for him, he's going to start at the other outside linebacker position. He'll be backed up by Kenjera Daniel, who's another senior. So a lot of experience in the linebacking core here at Kentucky, and that's been a strength of theirs the last couple of years. They tend to keep the plays in front of them, unless they're playing a team that just really has them overmatched. They've been pretty solid in the front seven the last couple of years. They really have. At corner, we got Lonnie Johnson and Chris Westry battling it out for one spot. Westry lost his spot to Lonnie Johnson in the last five games of the season. They had some problems, as we said, in the defending the pass, and the pass rush wasn't there all of the time for them. They're more of a read and react type of defense where they make tackles in space and keep things in front of them. But the secondary has been not so good the last few years. Derek Beatty is over at the other corner position. He sat out the whole spring with a shoulder injury. They expect him to play. He'll be backed up by Jordan Griffin, probably Westry if he loses his other spot. Darius West is back. At strong safety, he's really, really fast. He hits really hard. He'll be backed up by Devontae Robinson, who's a sophomore. Mike Edwards is back. He led the team in tackles last year with 97. He had four picks, and he can play strong safety as well as corner. And Yusuf Coker is going to back him up. Max Duffy is a big-time punter that they've recruited. He was highly rated, and he's one of those Aussie rugby kickers-style kickers that they like to – employed the last few years. Recruiting wise, Kentucky pretty much where they normally are. They rank 38th in the nation, 11th in the conference. 4 four-star players and 23-star players. They always add, it seems to be, what they need. They don't ever exceed expectations and whatnot. We'll run through their schedule real fast, and Taylor and I will tell you what we think they're going to end up doing.
All losses.
No, that's not true. They start out with Central Michigan.
Yeah.
Well, that could be closer than you think, but I think it's a win. At Florida.
I don't forgot what I said for the other one.
I think you said they were going to beat Florida, but whatever. I'm calling that a loss. Murray State.
Win.
Mississippi State.
Probably lose.
I would think so. They tend to struggle with them. South Carolina. We got to beat them at some point, man. We got to. But it might not be this year. I'm going to call it a loss to Carolina. I am, and don't call me a homer for saying that, but I think we're better than them. We've played like absolute garbage late in games against them the last couple of years. Hopefully we can turn that around. At Texas A&M.
Probably lose.
I think so, too. We've already got them with 1, 2, 3. I've got them with 4 losses. You've got them with 3. Vanderbilt at home. What you think?
Probably lose.
I could see you saying that. I'm going to say win. At Missouri, I'm calling that a loss.
Yeah.
Georgia.
Definitely lost.
At Tennessee.
Who knows?
I don't know. I'm going to call it a loss. Middle Tennessee.
I don't really know about that.
At Louisville.
Loss.
I'm going to call it a loss as well. So
they might win three games.
They might win three or four, maybe five.
That's bad.
They could come back and win seven games. They've got a lot of experience back on this team, but they don't have a quarterback. So if they can find somebody to take care of the football.
That's a tough schedule.
It really is. They've got a really tough schedule for them. That's very, very tough. I mean, they're only – who is their cupcake? Murray State?
Yeah.
I mean, hell, that's it. I mean, because Middle Tennessee to them, no. Rick Stossel's teams are solid, man. They can move the football. I don't know if his son's back or not. If he is, hell, they've got a good quarterback. Central Michigan's always pretty tough on the offensive side of the ball. I know Louisville's retooling, but they've had Kentucky's number the last couple of years. So, I don't see much good happening for the Wildcats this year, and that makes me smile a little bit because I don't like them. And the hell with them. So, I hope they lose every game. I really do. There's only one I really, really care about, but – now we're going to go on over to
the other Columbia.
This the other Columbia, the lesser Columbia, but there's been a couple times where it hasn't been the lesser Columbia. Tell us a little bit about the Missouri Tigers, how they ended up last year, because they got some weird numbers. Their offensive numbers are
big,
outstanding, and a lot of that's against bad competition. The defensive numbers need serious improvement. Run them down for us real quick.
They had 37 points per game average for the 14th best scoring offense, 193 rushing yards for the 36th ranked rushing offense. Passing, they had averaged 308 yards a game for the 14th best. Total, 502 yards for the 8th best offense in the nation.
And the best quarterback in the SEC by far. Yeah, go ahead.
Defense. They gave up average of 32 points a game for 97th.
Ooh.
They gave up 160 rushing yards for 58th best.
Yeah.
Passing, 254 yards for the 106th best. And totals 414.
Wow.
For the 82nd ranked defense.
Mm.
Turnover margin minus 8.
Minus 8. Now, they reeled off several wins in a row. Last season before the bowl loss, I think it was 6 wins in a row before the bowl loss.
So they had a superb offense.
They really did. And they did it against some – they did it against some mediocre suspect defenses. They did. I will admit that. But I will tell you this. They're crazy to watch on offense, and they have a system. The thing I think about Missouri, and we'll get into this a little bit later, they didn't really have that defensive tackle, that defensive end, that linebacker that they usually have that just goes out there and is unblockable. They were so good under Pinkel for so long where they would develop a 2- or 3-star guy, would end up getting drafted in the first or second round on in the NFL. And most of them, none of them are really like superstars in the NFL, but they were churning out defensive linemen and linebackers there for a while. They got to get back to that if they want to get back to their winning ways. We'll go through – really, last year they didn't have any really, really big wins. They did beat Arkansas at Arkansas by 3. That's not a huge win, but that was a crazy football game. I remember that. They pounded Florida 45-16 and Tennessee 50-17, and then Vandy 45-17 in 3 straight weeks in SEC East play. And that was really where they started to shine. Like, they started to click at the end of the season, and other teams just bent to their will. It just was that simple. They could just run by you, and they were exciting to watch. They have – how many starters they got back? Because it's insane. I think it's the entire damn offense, I believe.
10 on offense.
Now, one of those is the kicker, but damn. I mean, 9 out of 11 guys starters back from the number 8 offense in the country. This is why – this team is that I'm so high on Missouri. We'll get into that in a little bit.
And they got 7 defensive starters returning.
All right, run through this depth chart real quick. Drew Locke is back. He's the reigning All-SEC quarterback. This is his 3rd offensive scheme now in 4 years at Missouri. So they're changing things up a little bit. That could throw a wrinkle in it. I just think the guy's got all the throws. He can run the up-tempo offense. He can run when he needs to. Yeah, this is it for him. Good. I mean, but yes. But they, I guarantee you they got somebody behind him that can sling the rock around, man. These guys know what they're doing at the quarterback position. They'd steadily have good quarterbacks. Behind him is Michael Wilson. I'm sure they have some 4-star, 3-star quarterback they're high on in recruiting. We're not going to delve into all of those guys right now. We just don't have enough time. We got to keep this show under 2 hours so we can upload the damn thing, and don't want to make it too long for you guys to listen to. At running back, we got Demaria Crockett, who was a 1,000-yard rusher 2 years ago. He had shoulder surgery after last got banged up last year. Larry Roundtree III is his backup. At wide receiver, Emmanuel Hall. He'll be backed up by Harry Ballard III. Jonathan Johnson is a home run threat every time he touches the ball. A little water bug, little guys like I like to see. Dominic Jacinto will back him up. Nate Brown is a fifth-year veteran at wide receiver. He had a huge spring, according to everything that I've read. And Rashad Floyd will back him up. At tight end, you got Albert Okwuegbunam, and he is had 11 touchdown catches last season. Big-time player. Led the SEC at tight end in touchdown catches. Kendall Blanton, as a senior, will back him up. And the other guy's a sophomore, man, so get used to seeing him. Probably going to play on Sundays if he keeps catching balls like that. And a lot of it's the system, but, man, when pro scouts see a tight end getting open and making plays in the open field and catching big touchdown passes, they start salivating at the mouth. Their entire offensive line is back. Yasir Durant at left tackle. He took the job from a senior last year early in the season. Hiron White will back him up. At left guard, Kevin Pendleton. He's a veteran. This is his third year as a starter. He's a senior. Case Cook, a freshman, will back him up. Tristan Colon Castillo is your center. He's a sophomore. He's a natural leader that they say, and he was their anchor as a true freshman. He played a lot last year. Jonah Dubinsky is going to back him up. Trevor Wallace Sims is considered their strongest lineman at right guard. He has all SEC ability. He had a lot of penalties last season. They'd like him to cut down on that. Larry Borum will back him up. And at right tackle, Paul Adams, he's a three-year starter. He's their most consistent blocker. He's a senior. He'll be backed up by another senior, Samson Bailey. And Tucker McCann is back at kicker. He settled in last year as a sophomore, had a couple game winners, including one against Arkansas. And then Nick Bartolotta will back him up. At the defensive side of the ball, at D end is Trey Williams. He had shoulder surgery in the spring, but he came on late last year. He's one of those freshmen that got in and got playing time when the defense just looked like trash. And Nate Anderson will back him up. He's a senior. Terry Beckham Jr. is in the middle. He turned down the draft to build on his 7-sack junior year. They had him projected as like a third or fourth rounder. He decided to stay and finish his college career, maybe improve his draft status. Jordan Elliott is a sophomore who will back him up. Another tackle position is Walter Palmer. He is just a run stopper, big guy. He'll be backed up by Rashad Brandon. Both of them are seniors. At the other defensive end spot, Chris Turner, he's an edge rusher who they compare to former All-American Shane Ray, and he's backed up by Franklin Agbashamir. Oh, what are these names? Mm-hmm. Therese Hall at linebacker. He's coming off a big season with 12.5 tackles for loss. He'll be backed up by Aubrey Miller Jr. Cale Garrett is he led the team with 105 tackles. He'll be the inside linebacker, Mike linebacker in the 4-3, and he's backed up by Jamal Brooks. Brandon Lee at the outside linebacker position. He's they're switching to a 4-3, okay. And Ronald Perkins will back him up. At corner, we have DeMarcus Acy and Christian Holmes. Adam Sparks, who played as a true freshman, and he's a big-time tackler. And another freshman, Terry Petrie, will back them up as well. At strong safety, we have Joshua Bledsoe, and he's moved from outside linebacker to take over the strong safety position. Got pretty good speed. Sure tackler, and he'll be backed up by Jordan Ulmer, who's a sophomore. Cam Hilton takes over the free safety position. Has played some corner and strong safety. He's been all over the secondary. This team just needs – they need help anywhere they can get it on that side of the ball, it seems. Tyree Gillespie will back him up. And Corey Filoni is the punter. Now, let's go through the schedule real fast, Taylor. UT Martin comes into the other Columbia week one. Wyoming comes to Columbia. Wyoming's not bad, but I'll call it a win, too. At Purdue, a team that thrashed them last year 35-3. They're at Purdue this year.
Win.
Bold move. I'm going to agree with you, though. Georgia, at home.
Loss.
Okay. I disagree, but that's you and I. At South Carolina.
Win.
I'm going to say the same thing. Big game right here at the Tide. can't call that a win.
I can't.
No. No. Memphis at home. There's a tough one. Man, this schedule's getting weird.
Might be high scoring.
Could be. I'm going to call it a win, though. I think they have better talent. Kentucky at home.
Win.
Yeah. At Florida. They shellacked them last year. I've already called it a win on the Florida side. So I mean, I said Missouri. So Vanderbilt at home.
Probably win.
At Tennessee.
Probably win.
Arkansas at home. That's up in the air. I'm gonna call it a win. I'm gonna say Missouri loses two ball games, and they could lose more. This could be a 9 or 10 win team. We'll delve into that a little deeper in just a moment. We will. And in recruiting, no 4 stars, no 5 stars. All 25 commitments were 3 stars.
Jesus Christ.
This is what they do though. They get 2 and 3 stars, generally 3 stars, and they develop. That's what they did under Pinkel. And they would steal a 4-star, 5-star here and there. They had Beckham at receiver several years ago and whatnot. They've had some flashes here or there, but it doesn't seem like they really needed a ton. They played a lot of freshmen and sophomore last year on the defensive side of the ball, so I would think that they stocked up on offensive players, and that is what it looks like to me. But a well-rounded class, a lot of defensive ends. So it seems like they met their needs and they recruited well for their area. It's tough to get a bunch of huge players. We're not going to go into the Gamecocks because we've already gone through every bit of information we're giving you and more than we're giving you on these other teams on the Carolina side of things. And just to move this right along, let's move on up to Rocky Top, where they've got a new coach, Jeremy Pruitt. He's coming here. He is replacing Butch Jones. He's been the defensive coordinator for 2 teams that won a national championship. Leaving Bama, coming to old Knoxville, where they just had a brilliant season last year. Going 0-8 in the SEC. Has that ever happened? I really wish I'd have looked that up. As a matter of fact, you give us the stats from the Vols last year. And we're going to move into them because I got a lot of shit to talk about these guys. These are one of my least favorite teams ever. They have the ugliest creamsicle-colored
Butch
uniforms.
Jones was a dumpster fire.
Well, he came in after a coach who was a dumpster fire, and he thought he could turn it around. Dooley sucked. Dooley sucked and was not a good hire. They can't recruit worth a shit. I mean, Philip Fulmer, there was a thing, and I'm going to get off a little bit on this team more than – and I said that in a weird way, but – I'm going to go on a tangent on this team more than I will other teams because I just – back on this show, Primetime with the Pac-Man, that used to come on out of Charlotte. It was syndicated throughout the Southeast, I know, maybe nationally. We used to get it on the Fan here out of Florence. It used to come on from 3 to 7. I think it went off the air in like 2010 when he left at a dispute with CBS over money and whatnot, and he went on to satellite radio and runs like afternoon – drive there, or maybe has a morning show now, which I think is what he wanted. But he went back and looked at the recruiting under like Fulmer's last 2 years, and then the year that dumbass Kiffin was there, who's kind of turned his career around. And I don't hate the guy, but he went to Tennessee and talked a lot of trash and didn't deliver. But he looked at their recruits, and it was something like, all right, they had gotten. I'm going to butcher these numbers, and I don't know how to look them up, but it was like 28 or 30 4-stars and 5-star players they got over a 4-year span, okay, or a 3-year span. Do you know how many of those 30 – it was 30 – no, it was 30-something. So it was 30-plus 4- and 5-star players they got over a 3- or 4-year span. Do you know how many of those ended up starting at Tennessee for more than 1 season? You know what that number is?
No.
4 of those players started for more than 1 year at Tennessee. So that's where the downfall started. It wasn't just Fulmer leaving. It wasn't the fact that you got Lane Kiffin and then he was gone. It was the fact that you were recruiting the wrong guys. It's what happened in Columbia and Spurrier's last couple years. We were recruiting the same classes. And this is where I've been watching Last Chance U and binge watching last season and this season recently, and I told you, it's made me believe less in recruiting than I already did, and here's why. I watch a kid like Malik Henry, who went to Florida State, and John Franklin kid that went to Florida State. I'm not going to badmouth DeAndre Johnson. I don't know what he's doing right now, but he looked the best of those three. All 3 Florida State quarterbacks have been on that show on Netflix for 3 years. All three of them were the number one or number two quarterbacks in the country coming out of high school. And they're garbage. None of them are worth a darn at quarterback. They're just not. They're not very good. It makes me – when I watch a guy – you watched a couple episodes earlier with me throwing off his back foot, just horrible throws, can't make a sideways throw. They just look like garbage. Well, they misevaluated at Tennessee, and South Carolina did for a few years as well. And honestly, we had that 3-9 year. You can say that this is sort of that same thing there. This is unacceptable there. At Carolina, it was kind of like we didn't want to see it happen, and we thought those days were behind us as well. But we're not the program at the level nationally. We're just not that Tennessee is at as far as name recognition. But that has changed over the last several years because Tennessee's not seen as a tippy-top program anymore and haven't been for quite some time. They're still delusional and think they're there. They're just not. Florida is way closer to being nationally relevant again than Tennessee is. I think the Gamecocks are even better talent-wise than Tennessee is. We've beaten them 2 years in a row now after they got us a few straight. So moving into their stats, tell us a little bit about what they did on their adventure of going 0-8 in the SEC.
Offense stats, they were the 117th ranked scoring offense.
It's just fun.
20 this points per game.
Oh, my God.
They were the 112th ranked rushing offense.
Garbage.
With 117 yards per game. They were the 108th ranked passing offense with 173 yards per
game. This quarterback's bad. He's bad.
Total 291 yards for the 124th ranked offense.
Hey, the Gamecocks are not much better than this statistically. But guess what we did? We beat them. Yeah. So who cares? But they are bad. They should never be this bad, but they are.
Defense.
It's reality.
They averaged giving up 29 points a game for the 83rd ranked scoring defense.
Yeah.
251 rushing yards allowed for the 125th ranked rushing defense. Third best pass defense. It's 162 yards per game.
Because you didn't have to throw it against them. You didn't. You just run it right at them.
They totaled 104.
Unless you're the Gamecocks.
413 yards for the 81st ranked total defense.
Wow.
-3 turnover margin.
Oh, they're bad. They got a lot of starters back, do they not?
6 offense, 7 defense.
All right. So let's run through the depth chart really quickly. I'm going to screw this guy's name up. Jarrett Garantano. He was 1-5 last year. People are high on him. I really don't know why. He is backed up by Keller Christ, is a senior. This is where they're struggling and have been struggling. They had, like, I want to say it was 2 or 3 top 10 to 12 recruiting classes in a row, and these guys have just not panned out. They have not. They do have a little bit of that back on the defensive side of the ball. That is where I could see them being a better football team this year. I didn't think you'd see what we saw out of them last year. I knew they'd struggle a little bit offensively, but not as bad as they were defensively. Ty Chandler is back at running back. He split time, and he's going to split time this year with Tim Jordan, I should say. Wide receiver, you got Brandon Johnson, who led the team with 37 catches but just had one touchdown. He's backed up by Latrell Williams. Marquez Galloway had 24 catches for 5 touchdowns. He's a pretty darn good wide receiver in a bad offense. So, I mean, that's a part of this problem. This used to be wide receiver U. Peerless Price, Kelly Washington, guys that just went up and down the field on you, quarterbacks like Peyton and the rest, Casey Clawson, guys that made plays for years. This team always was up to play with anyone, but they're just – how the mighty have fallen. Josh Palmer at wide receiver. He only caught 9 passes last year, but penciled in as a starter. Tyler Bird will back him up. Jordan Murphy will also see playing time. At tight end, you got Dominic Wood Anderson. He's a junior college player. He's an All-American, junior college All-American. They're very high on him. Eli Wolf will back him up. At left tackle, Drew Richmond returns as a starter. He had 13 starts over the last 2 years. He's got some serious upside. And Kayraj Calbert will back him up. Trey Smith at left guard. He was freshman All-American. They're touting him as a future NFL star. They do have some size. They look the part, even if they haven't played it. Nathan Niehaus will back him up. Center is Ryan Johnson, who's a sophomore. We're going to play a lot of young guys here on the offense now. He's a sophomore. He's played everywhere on the line. They're putting him at center. They don't really know where they want to go yet. Brian Garvey will be there to back him up if he doesn't go at center. Devontae Brooks at right guard. He's a tight end who started four games at guard last year for him because they did have a bunch of injuries. And Riley Locklear will back him up. Marcus Tatum has gained 30 pounds since he arrived at Tennessee. And he's going to make his first year start at right tackle. Chance Hall, who is a senior, will back him up. Brent Simaglia made 8 of 13 field goals last year. That's just not good enough. But they really didn't – hell, they don't think they got in field goal range a lot. They just could not score. On the defensive side of the ball, where I do think they will improve, Jonathan Kongbo is a junior college transfer who has yet to reach his full potential, but he has the size – and ability, the scouts think, to be a big-time SEC player. Shy Tuttle is at tackle. And I want to mention this guy, Eric Goodman, who I watched on Last Chance U. He committed to Tennessee. He looked like a big-time player on there. I know that's against lesser talent, but he's about 6'6", 305. He's got the size to come in and play for them as well. At defensive end, you got Kyle Phillips. He had 4.5 tackles for loss in only 7 games, and they think he's going to break out his senior season here finally. Matthew Butler and Alexis Johnson will back them up. Darrell Taylor is at the linebacker position. He had a big spring. He'll be backed up by DeAndre Johnson, who's a sophomore. Corte Sapp, he's one of their fastest linebackers on the team. He's a returning starter. At inside linebacker, he'll be backed up by Austin Smith. Darren Kirkland Jr. has been injury prone. He had 66 tackles in 2015, but missed significant playing time last year and the year before last. Daniel Batuli is back at outside linebacker. He had 23 tackles in the opening game last season. Wow. And he had 90 stops overall. J.J. Peterson will back him up. At corner, you got Baylen Buchanan. He is the son of Philip Buchanan. And he's emerged as a starter in the spring. Cheyenne LaBruzza will back him up. Sean Schamberger is going to be your other corner, backed up by Marquill Osborne. Nigel Warrior, what a name. Second on the team in tackles in 83. What a name. Backed up by Theo Jackson at strong safety. At free safety, we got Micah Abernathy, third on the team with 81 tackles. You don't want three of your leading tacklers in the back. Well, at linebacker's fine, but if two of your three leading tacklers are in the secondary, that means you got problems at linebacker on the defensive line, getting off the ball, you're getting blown back. Or these guys are just tremendous playmakers and headhunters and just come up to the ball. It could be one or the other, but whatever. We're going to go into their recruiting just real fast since I'm right here on my page. And they ranked 20th in the nation, had a nice recruiting class, fallen a little bit from where they were. But I do think this staff is going to end up being a better staff than what they've had in the past, a more football-savvy, smarter staff. They ranked 20th in the country, as I said, 8th in the SEC. 8 four-star players, 12 three-stars. We're going to go over some guys to watch out for at the end of this thing when we wrap it up. But just go through – last year, just some big losses. I mean, no big wins at all. Didn't beat anybody that they weren't supposed to. Got just waxed by Bama. So we'll run in the schedule this year, and you tell me what you think, Taylor. And I know I'm talking fast as hell on this thing, but we're trying to keep this under our little threshold here so we can upload it with ease without editing. Opener in Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium against West Virginia. Win or loss? I got to call it a loss. I don't know much about West Virginia right now except the fact that I know that they usually have a good offense. I think that Tennessee is just not going to – they're not going to be able to score. I just don't feel it. They played Georgia Tech well in the opener last year. They lucked up and won that game. But I just don't – I don't feel it. I think that's a loss. East Tennessee State in Knoxville, that's a win. UTEP at home, who went 0-12 last year, I think that's a win. Florida, it's a toss-up. I'll call it a loss just because Florida has their number. But,
yeah.
But that's a toss-up. It could go either way. I think the score's like the same every year. It's 24-20, 27-20, 27-20. It's the same every year. Whatever. At Georgia, I think that's a loss.
Absolutely.
At Auburn.
A loss. Ooh,
back-to-back. Guess who they play after that?
Alabama.
Yeah. Well, they have a break between Georgia and Auburn. Lucky for them. But then they play at Auburn on the Plains. That's a loss. Bama at home, that's a loss. Didn't he come to Columbia to play the Gamecocks?
And get another loss.
I think so, too. That's a tough five games in a row there, bud. With one break, they're going to be some beat-up sons of guns there. Charlotte at home. Let's just play in Charlotte and then have Charlotte on whatever. That's a win. Kentucky, did I count that as a win for Kentucky on the thing? I don't think I did. Maybe I did.
I don't remember.
Whatever. If I contradict myself, I'm sorry. I could see that being a loss. It doesn't matter. Missouri's a loss. Vandy was a loss last year, 42-24, by the way. So I don't really know how you could call that a win, but I'll call it a win. I think they're going to end up, let's see, five, six at the most.
How did they get all these some of these easy games they got?
It doesn't matter. They haven't been winning these games.
UTEP.
They haven't been winning these games. Well, they beat Indiana State last year and beat UMass by four. I mean, so let's just, I mean, come on. Now, the Gamecocks barely did beat them. Don't get me wrong, but at least we did beat them. The hell with Tennessee. So we got our last team on the agenda here before we go into some more commentary, and that's going to be the old Commodores. So give us some more info on what's going on in Nashville, how they stacked up last year statistically.
They had the 95th ranked scoring offense, 24 points a game.
That doesn't surprise me.
170.
The whole. Well, let me say this. The entire East on offense, besides Missouri, besides Missouri and Georgia, is this just not a dumpster fire of offenses
it's
in the East?
Bad.
It's horrible. All of them were from like 95th to what was Vandy just ranked? Would you say 92 or 95
overall?
Yeah,
they're overall. They're 102nd.
Oh, so Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, Vandy, and Kentucky are all none. Are in the top 100 offenses in the country. Wow. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They gave up 243 passing yards per game for the 53rd ranked passing offense.
That is insane.
Average 107 rushing yards for the 120th ranked rushing offense. And like I said, total, well, they were 102nd.
That's
defense. They gave up 31 points a game for the 89th best scoring defense. They gave up 198 rushing yards for the 100th best rushing defense.
Mm.
194 pass yards. So that's, but I guess that's kind of like you said, if you letting people run all over you, they don't have to throw.
They don't have to throw it.
Yeah.
Not
so they
all.
Had the 26th best passing defense.
Well,
total.
Good for them.
They had the 65th best defense in the nation, minus five turnover margin.
Let's have a little fun here. Vanderbilt had one SEC win last year. Who was it, Taylor? We just went over
Tennessee.
The Vols. I just think that's nice. And I can't say too much, but I have to have my fun while I can have it. You know, Vandy gave us a scare last year late in the ball game. I think it was a game that we should have had wrapped up. But of course, we had to make a couple mistakes late and whatnot. So let's run through how many starters they got back and run through their depth chart real quick. And we're going to wrap this thing up with a little short analysis of
they
the entire league.
Seven offensive starters coming back and four on defense.
In their case, it's probably – a good thing they've only got four back on defense, but you never know. Kyle Shermer's back at quarterback. He's a nice quarterback, man. Look, it's not easy to play quarterback at Vanderbilt. Just to throw some stats at you real fast, I haven't done this with a lot of guys, but he threw for 2,800 yards, 26 touchdowns, and only 10 picks last year. So he takes care of the ball. He distributes the ball pretty well. They are a run-heavy offense, typically a run-first offense, run to set up the pass. But they've kind of adapted a little bit under Mason, and they like to sling it around a little bit more. But he's a solid damn quarterback, and I think he's one of the best in the SEC. I really do. I don't think he's bad at all. I think Florida and Tennessee would like to have him. I can tell you that right now. I guarantee you Dan Mullen would rather have this kid than what he's got, and I know that Tennessee would love to have this kid, and Kentucky would like to have him. Everybody else in the East is probably happy with who they have at quarterback, but he's a darn good quarterback, I think. Deuce Wallace will back him up. At running back, they've got Keyshawn Vaughn. He had 1,232 yards from scrimmage in 2 years at Illinois. He transferred over here. And Blossom Game is back, who had a big year last year. They're going to split play in time. Vandy likes to rush two or three guys at you like most teams do nowadays. If you don't have two running backs, you have none. I mean, that's not necessarily the case for everybody, but, you know, look, man, these are the guys that are taking huge hits time and time again, and guys you have to lean on. You really want to keep them fresh, and that's what Georgia and Bama have done so well the last several years. They always have two or three studs at running back, and they could just keep pounding the rock at you. Not putting Vanderbilt on that level, but the last few years, they've had some nice running backs. At wide receiver, Kalijah Lipscomb led the team with 16.5 yards per catch and had 8 receiving touchdowns last year. He'll be backed up by James Bostic, who's a freshman. Chris Pierce had no catches in 9 games last year, just played special teams, but he's going to come on at wide receiver after the spring. Trey Ellis will back him up. Excuse me. Donovan Tennyson is allegedly the fastest player on the team. 13.8 yards per touch in his career. He's going to be the other wide receiver, backed up by C.J. Bowler. And Jared Pinkney is back at tight end. He's kind of like a boom or bust, they say. He's got 5 TDs in his career, 553 yards. He's been there a couple years. He hasn't really produced too much, but he is a threat. Sam Dobbs will back him up. At left tackle, Justin Skule, he started in 25 consecutive games, will be backed up by Jonathan Stewart. At left guard, Cole Clemens. He's from Utah. Played in 5 games last year as a reserve tackle. He's taking the spot from Sage Young, who will probably move somewhere else on the line, but is listed as a backup at this point. Egidio De La Ripa started at right guard in the final 8 games, moves to center, and he's going to be backed up by Sean McMoore. Bruno Regan has 27 straight starts. They say he is an NFL lineman. He is backed up by Jared Southers. And at right tackle is Devin Cochran, 10 starts last year. They think a lot of him as well. He's a sophomore. As I said, Sage Young is back, who's had a solid career at Vanderbilt. So they've got some veterans on the offensive line. Let's go ahead and say all 5 starters are back, but they've played a lot of guys last year, it looks like, as well. So they have some talent up front, and maybe they'll be a little bit better offensively. I hope they're not, but whatever. At kicker, Riley Guy has 1 career point. So he's made an extra point, but they say he's in the 50-yard field goal range. That's about where he's comfortable from, 50 yards and in. He'll be backed up by Javon Rice. On the defensive side of the ball, Dare Odeyingbo, I'm guessing. I probably read that completely wrong, and I'm sorry for that. He's got 15.5 career tackles for loss in just 14 starts. Drew Birchmeyer will back him up. Cameron Tidd is at defensive tackle. He's had 3 starts last year with 16 total tackles. And for a defensive lineman, 16 tackles is not completely shabby. They're more disruptors. Rutger Rittmeyer will back him up. Dayo Ndiyangbo, who is the brother of Dare Ndiyangbo, he had 4.5 tackles for loss last year in part-time duty, and they need him to step up. Stone Edwards will back him up. Linebacker, we have Charles Wright. He had 9 sacks last year. That's the most at Vanderbilt in a season since 1994. He also had 8 quarterback pressures. He's backed up by Caleb Pearl. Jordan Griffin at linebacker had 5 starts, was 3rd in tackles with 62 last year, and 5th in tackles for loss with 8.5. So they had several guys that had tackles for loss and contributed on the defense. Nobody really stood out huge. It seems like the Colin Anderson will back him up. Andrew Rector at linebacker, he's a converted safety. He'll be backed up by Dimitri Moore at the other inside spot. Josh Smith is a former U.S. Army All-American. They expect him to do big things. Andre Mintz will back him up. Juwan Williams, 12 career pass breakups. Still doesn't have a pick in 2 years, but he's back for his junior year. Hoping to improve. Elijah Hamilton will back him up at that corner spot. The other side of the field, Donovan Sheffield will play corner. 30 career games, has no picks, though. Randall Haney will back him up. At safeties, we have Zaire Jones at strong safety and Ladarius Wiley at free safety. Jones played every game as a freshman, and Frank Coppett will back him up at strong safety. Ladarius Wiley had 19 career starts so far and had 88 tackles last year to lead the team. From the free safety spot, as I said a while ago, that's not a good thing most of the time. Tate Daly will back him up. And Parker Thorne is at a transfer. He was an all-Ivy League punter, and he's now at Vanderbilt, 42.9 yards a punt. So, let's go through the schedule fast, in a hurry. Play Middle Tennessee State opening game. What's your thoughts?
Loss.
Okay, I can get behind that. Nevada at home next game. That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. I'm going to call it a win, but yeah. I think it's a high-scoring affair. Neither team really plays too good a defense. At Notre Dame, projected to have a big year. That's a loss, I think.
Yeah.
They have host the Gamecocks the next week.
Win.
They're going to beat Carolina. You think so? You can say whatever the hell you want.
I could see it.
I could see it too, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't believe that. You can say what you want
to
say.
Get under Dustin's skin.
Tennessee State. That's a win. Yeah. At Georgia.
Loss.
Florida at home.
What did I pick for the other one?
I'm pretty sure you said Florida would win.
I would hope so.
At Kentucky.
Probably loss.
It's a toss-up, but I can call it a loss. At Arkansas. Hogs should be better.
They should be.
I think they should be. I think they have to be. Chad Morris is there. We'll get into that later on. I think he's going to rejuvenate that program if he can find a quarterback. At Missouri, I think that's a loss, a big loss. Ole Miss at home. It's their permanent cross-division rival.
Loss?
I think so. Tennessee.
Win.
I could see that going either way. So I think based on what we just said, one, two, then we got them 3-4 wins. They won 5 games last year. So that is going to do it for each team's analysis. Now we're going to give you a little bit of what we think is going to shake down division-wise. All right, and before I get into that, I do want to go back, and I know we're getting really long-winded on this. Listen to it in parts if you have to. I want to give you some players of impact from the recruiting classes this year. Maybe a sleeper or two of who from each team, and including the Gamecocks, because I think we might have gone over it, but it won't hurt to go over again. At the University of Florida, from their 14th ranked national class, Jacob Copeland at wide receiver, 6 foot, 190 pound, 4-star. This is a speed guy. You could see him get in this year. Richard Garage at lineman. He's a left tackle, 6'5", 270. They had some problems at offensive line the last couple years. This could be a guy that this year and next year could get in and get some playing time. And Emory Jones, who's a quarterback, 4-star dual threat. They say he's got a big arm, 6'2", 192. He's a top 100 recruit. So this is the kind of guy that Mullen wants, mobile, can throw the hell out the ball. Good deep passer, threw a bunch of touchdowns in high school. That's exactly up his alley. And the sleeper pick here is another lineman, 6'5", 330-pounder. And that's already the size you need. And his name is Chris Bleak. And this is just a guy. He's only a 3-star recruit. That's why he's a sleeper. But this is a guy that could come in and compete the next couple years and be a breakout player. So moving on to the Bulldogs. And they had a stellar class. Give you the sleeper first is Jordan Davis. He's a defensive tackle, 6'6", 335. Already a 3-star recruit, but they're saying he has NFL upside because of his size. He played at a smaller school, so he dominated. He has big size. They're running that 3-4 defense. That's what you need in the middle, just to clog holes. Newcomers that could be impact players, Jamari Salyer at guard, 6'4", 340. He's the nation's number one offensive guard. Zamir White at running back, the nation's number one running back, 6 foot, 210 pounds. This is another guy to keep your eye on, Zamir White. Justin Fields at quarterback. They've already penciled him in as the backup. The nation's number one dual threat quarterback, number two overall prospect behind Trevor Lawrence. He's got a big playmaking ability, 6 foot three, 225 pounds. They're going to have to play this guy, I think, in certain situations. Maybe not immediately, but after a couple games and get him acclimated to the system. Georgia just really racked up in recruiting, it seems like. I hope most of them are busts. I really do. Go to the Wildcats really quick. Their sleeper pick, Devon Hawkins at defensive line, 6'4", 275, 3-star prospect. They're saying he may be one of the surprise picks in the class. They're guys that are expected to possibly contend for playing time this year. Terry Wilson at quarterback, 6'3", 205-pound junior college transfer. They're saying he's going to push for the job right away. Marquand McCall, 6'4", 355-pound offensive lineman, could play multiple spots. They think he's going to be a tackle, but he could. He's played all over the line. Darian Kennard at offensive line, he's their four-star recruit, one of four. He's 6'7", 330 pounds. I think at Kentucky, guys like that could get on the field immediately. Moving right along to Missouri. Let me flip over there really quick. I lost my spot. Very professional of me right now. And they didn't have, like I said, they didn't have a super highly ranked class, 43rd, but right where they normally are, and they seem to win way more than they lose. Not a ton more games, but they are a winning football team. Trajan Jeffcoat at defensive end, 6'3", 220-pounder. He's a three-star. He's from South Carolina. So we lost out on a recruit to Missouri. Cam Scott at wide receiver is a newcomer of impact, 6'2", 180. He's got some big-time speed. Well, okay, what you doing over there? Chad Bailey at linebacker, 6', 235 pounds. He's expected to push for starting time this year, as is Antar Thompson, a 6'5", 310-pounder at defensive tackle. So, the Gamecocks, we went over this the other day. Really quickly, we'll go over it again. Rick Sandage is expected to push for playing time at the defensive line immediately, 6'5", 285 pounds. The top recruit for the Gamecocks, Josh Van at wide receiver, 5'11", 175 pounds. That little waterbug-style guy can make plays all over the field, catch and run. They hope he's a home run threat. And Dylan Wanham, whose older brother's already playing well for the Gamecocks, 6'5", 320 pounds. He's an offensive tackle, and they think he's just going to be a big-time player. He's a top 150 player as well. Darius Rush is a sleeper. This is a wide receiver. He's a track standout. He's 6'2", 190. Hopefully can take over a spot on the outside and add to that already what already looks to be a pretty darn good receiving core at University of South Carolina. Tennessee Volunteers, we got a sleeper pick, Cedric Tillman, 6'3", 205-pound wide receiver. He was a late offer. He didn't really crack too many people's radar, it doesn't look like, at the D1 level, but they liked him late and they picked him up. Alante Taylor is another wide receiver that's expected to play this year. He's 6', 182, and they say he's just fast as lightning. Dominic Woods Anderson at tight end, junior college transfer, 6'5", 245, expected to push for playing time. And J.J. Peterson, who's a linebacker, 6'2", 230, and he's a big-time playmaker in high school and one of their four-star recruits expected to push for playing time immediately. So the Commodores, to round things out, Salua Messina at linebacker is their sleeper pick. This is a three-star recruit, 6'3", 205. They say he's pretty much everything you want mentally and physically at the linebacker position. Brendan Harris, a safety, 6'1", 205, expected to push for playing time immediately. Cameron Johnson, a wide receiver, 6'1", 180. They said he's a good outside wide receiver, good hands. And Austin Orji, 6'2", 230-pound inside linebacker. And they say he's a big-time tackler. So with that out of the way and talking about who could be some newcomers, where do you think the chips fall, Taylor, in the Eastern Division? Who do you pick as your winner? We'll talk about this for just a second and wrap things up.
Georgia.
Georgia's the winner. I think you have to pick Georgia, really, to be realistic about it. I think the number two spot is up for grabs. I think there are four teams that will contend for the East this season. And I think those four teams are Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, and Missouri. And I think the order in which I think they will compete, if you're going to go by last year's statistics, you would say, and a lot of the magazines and whatnot have said, Georgia 1, Carolina 2. Some of them have Carolina 3rd or 4th. But Carolina did beat Missouri and Tennessee last year, so and Florida, so you have to put them above them. But I do think Missouri's offense is going to be quite potent. I think if there is a weakness with Carolina, it could be we lost a lot of contributors on defense. I do think if we shore up the secondary, we can make a push. The offense has to make huge gains and strides in order to be able to contend in this division. Jake needs to get more consistent. He's got to hit the big throws when they're there. He's made a bunch of big plays, but he needs to make more. And we've got there's no excuse now at South Carolina, barring several injuries. There is no excuse to not produce better than 108th or whatever in the nation on offense. There's just no excuse for that, especially when you have Georgia that can just run the ball at you. They're going to play great defense. They just had a great recruiting class. I mean, they brought in guys. When you bring in 7 5-star guys, look, let's just say 4 of those guys don't play. The other 3 probably will, and at some point in time, they're going to get on the field and they're going to be better than a guy that's even been in the weight room a year, just on talent. So I think Georgia, talent-wise, is above everybody in this division. And I think they're probably 2nd or 3rd in the conference in terms of total talent. Obviously, Alabama being first, can't question that at all. But I think the way it shapes up to me, I'm going to throw a wrench in it. I'm going to say Missouri can legitimately – if Missouri improves on defense just a little bit, I think they can contend in the East. I'm not going to call them to outright win it, but I think they can win it. If they beat South Carolina, I do think they'll take care of business against Florida or Tennessee. If they can beat South Carolina and Georgia, obviously they're going to win it. But if they win 3 of those 4 games, I'm calling them to win. But I'll say Georgia, South Carolina, and Missouri battle it out for 2nd, and I'm going to put Florida or one of them, the loser of the South Carolina, Missouri battle at 3. And I think there's potential here to have 3, 4, 8-win teams or better at the top of the division. You agree with that?
Yeah.
Or do you think Kentucky can sneak up and do anything? You don't. Vandy?
No.
Tennessee could be much improved and still not so much in the win column. I said this about Carolina to a couple of my friends a couple of years ago, Taylor. I said, you know, when we were 6-7, Muschamp's first year, I said, you know, in 2017, we could lose more games or not win as many as we did last year and actually be better, because I thought the offense would look better. And it didn't, and the defense did take a step forward. So, look, man, the bottom line is I do think there are contenders here. South Carolina plays Georgia early. That could determine a lot of stuff. But the East is not going to be won or lost that day, I do not believe, because I do think Missouri is a contender. I think if Florida gets this freshman quarterback in there and he can get acclimated the first few weeks to the offense and shows the promise that he has, I think they could contend as well. Because their defense is going to make improvements, and they're going to be a darn good football team. They're athletic as hell. Missouri is stellar on offense. Expect the same thing. They're just going to look like they're on rollerblades and everybody else is not. I just really feel that way. They have an excellent quarterback. So, to me, the East is wide open. I can say Georgia is the front runner, but they did lose a ton on defense. I know they have talent, but it is wide open. So, I think if you said any one of those 4 teams, I couldn't call you dumb. I think the best chance anyone has to win this division, based on what I've seen, is other than Georgia, is Missouri, because of the offense. And I know they say defense wins championships, but look, man, it's hard to beat a team that can go out there and score 40 points a game. It really is. So that's what I got to say about the SEC East. I'm sorry I've been a little long-winded. We packed a lot of stuff in there. I had to talk like the damn micro machine, I feel like. Taylor, you got anything you want to add before we wrap this thing up?
Nope.
All right, so that being said, we've picked Georgia to win the East. I think we both feel like Missouri will be improved and Carolina will be improved. It's going to be a fun year. Hopefully Carolina can get things together and do a little bit more than they did for us last year. Last year was nice. We'd like to see some more big wins. I know Gamecock Nation is ready to see, you know, see us get back to the top 10 or try to crack that top 10. It would be nice to see, man, and get to a bigger bowl. But just have a good year and put up some better numbers, and I think we'll be fine with that, because we're still behind Clemson, still behind a lot of teams in the division like Georgia. And just talent wise, we're just not there yet, but we're improving. And I think the East is wide open, going to be fun to watch this year. Look forward to it. Our next episode is going to cover the SEC West, and we might bring you the same kind of format. Try not to be as long-winded, but probably will have to be to pack all the information in there. Going to have a Tiger episode dropping today as well. That's going to cover the Atlantic Division. Going to go over it the same way. We were going to leave Clemson out of it like we did Carolina today. Guys, thanks for listening to us. Give me some feedback if you'd like to. Taylor, nothing to add. So we're going to like us, follow us, You know the drill. Go on Facebook and check us out, Win or Die Sports. And I got a special little treat I'm going to tack on to the end of this episode. If you stuck with us for this long, like I said, listen to it in parts if you have to. The Tiger episode is going to be just as long. But I got a little treat I want to play on here, and some of you may have heard this before, and some of you may have not. But I hate the Georgia Bulldogs, so I'm going to add this here on the end. I wanted to do it at the beginning of the episode, and Taylor talked me out of it. But we're going to throw it on here at the end, and check us out next week when we preview the SEC West.
Send my boy to MIT. The dying mother said, don't send my boy to Emory. I'd rather see him dead. But send my boy to Georgia Tech. University of Georgia. I'd rather see him in hell. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. The cesspool of the South. On nights I've seen the glory of the stomping of the dogs. We will teach the Fordham farm boys nation stick to slopping hogs. When the jackets are triumphant, there will be a mighty cheer. We'll do the same next year. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. The cesspool of the South. On the field between the hedges there arose a mighty stench. In the dog's machine the engineers have thrown a monkey wrench. When the jackets are triumphant they will raise a mighty yell. Them dogs can go to hell. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. To hell, to hell, to hell with Georgia. The cesspool of the South. My eyes have seen the glory of the NCAA. They're investigating Georgia players to see how much they paid. After counting all the cars and the loans alumni made, they